This story took place approximately 8 years ago. I'm going to change the names for anonymity, and this is also a burner account and will be the only post that I send to you under this account. You see, I was with my girlfriend, we'll call her Casey, for 4 years at the time of the story. We both loved the outdoors, from hiking, fishing, picnics, you name it. We loved taking a drive to a random park and just exploring. One Saturday morning, we decided to take a hike. It was a decent drive for us, so I brought our camping gear just in case we decided to camp or sleep in the car instead of driving home. Also, depending on the weather, we might just suck it up and drive home because neither of us wanted to sleep in the rain, even if it was in the car. The hike started out peaceful and enjoyable, with the melody of the running water, the birds, bugs, and other woodland animals. It's what drew us outdoors in the first place. That escape from the hustle and bustle of everyday life. It was an escape for both of us to have peace of mind and clear our heads. We usually spent most of the time talking about our future and what we wanted, a wedding, what type of neighborhood we wanted to live in, the house, and all the other things that go on in the next chapter of life. We would go on about our dream scenarios, such as where we want to establish a hometown, but also somewhere to go and escape the winters, and how not having kids would hopefully free us up financially to accomplish that someday. It's hard to explain, but I felt like we had our best conversations when we were hiking. Now, as we sunk deeper into the woods, I got a weird feeling of paranoia. I felt like the peaceful sounds that surrounded us had changed somehow. The animals had a different tune or vibration, and the water that had passed up a long time ago turned into sounds that resembled whispers. And I felt like I was being followed and that someone was trying to get my attention at the same time. I quickly snapped out of it and went on with whatever conversation we were having at the time. I started getting tired and asked if we could take a break. I was surprised that I needed a break and figured that I just didn't have enough water that day, being dehydrated. After the break, I noticed a shift in Casey's mood and mannerisms. She seems way more quiet than usual and grumpy. I brushed it off and assumed that she was probably just tired as well, and I tried to continue a positive topic of conversation to cheer her up. Not long after she turned grumpy, she then turned into an outright jerk. Every comment I make is met with a rude or sarcastic comment, which at first made me think that she was kidding, but I quickly learned that she wasn't. I asked her if she wanted to turn around or take a break or just continue quietly. Anything to try and get a gauge of how I could make this situation better. But then we hit a very silent phase. She wouldn't communicate with me at all. I started trying to recall if I did or said anything that would have made her upset, but I honestly couldn't think of anything. Then as we get about as deep as we wanted to go on our hike, Casey has an absolute manic breakdown and begins screaming and crying at the same time. As I try to approach her to ask what's going on, she becomes violent, starts flailing her arms, one of which actually makes direct contact with my temple and knocks my glasses off. Now, I'm pretty much legally blind without my glasses, so needless to say that I need to quickly find them or I can't see anything. I also want to mention here that this is completely out of character for Casey. She wasn't that type of erratic person. I'm panicking on the ground trying to find my glasses, like Velma, while Casey is still flailing her arms and now running and screaming in the opposite direction. Thankfully, I quickly find my glasses and get up and chase after her. I catch up to her and she seems completely out of it. Her eyes don't seem glazed over, but they seem different. Like she's there, but she isn't there. I know that may sound weird, but that's the best way I can explain it. At this point, she has stopped screaming and acting violently towards me. I sat her down and made her drink some water. She still isn't talking much, but seems a little more settled down. Once I determine that she can walk, we start making our way down the trail back to the car. It seems as though the more we move and the further we get from her manic breakdown, the more back to normal she gets. She's now starting to talk to me and asks if she remembers what happened. She's telling me that she has no recollection and becomes embarrassed and apologetic for her episode. As we get about half a mile from the car, she seems completely back to normal. I'm still struggling to rationalize what happened. I have never, ever seen her act like that in the 4 years we had been together at that point. And we had been through happy times and also the most sad and stressful times of our lives. She was a big believer in the supernatural, so she was convinced that something dark had taken over her body. I didn't buy that, though. I knew that there had to be some kind of rational explanation. I did some research and found out that in those woods, there are actually some plants that can really mess you up. I'm thinking that she must have just come in contact with something, somehow, and maybe that's what caused the episode. Some of these plants can actually cause mania, fever, and even hallucinations, and it got me thinking, maybe I came into contact with them as well, and that's what made me feel anxious earlier that day. And without having an answer to that question, I've just chosen the simple solution, and that's to simply never hike there again. Has anyone else ever experienced something similar? And would you mind sharing your thoughts if you have? This story happened to me back when I still lived with my parents. I was commuting to college at the time and had 3 siblings that also lived at home, my brother and 2 sisters. For some context, we lived on 5 acres in rural Ohio, surrounded on both sides by woods and farm fields. Additionally, during the week, my dad normally left for work at 2 a.m., so I had always felt like it was my job to be the man of the house because he was gone during the times when you would imagine something sketchy happening. However, on this night, because it was the weekend, my dad was home. I woke up to the sound of my brother's voice trying to get my attention. We had separate rooms upstairs, and coming out of our rooms, you could look down over the banister and see our front door. When I woke up, it took a few moments to get out of the haze and realize what was going on. I looked at the clock, and it was around 2:30 a.m., and my brother told me that there were 2 men at our front door. Of course, now this was a real wake-up call. We quietly walk out of my room and peek over to look down at the front door. When we looked, there was no one at the door, but I noticed my parents off to the side, out of view of the glass on the front door, and I whispered down to my father, and he told me that there were 2 men who had been talking to each other and knocking on the door. Hearing my dad say this freaked me out even more. I went back into my room and grabbed my pistol, quickly shuffling down the stairs after looking to make sure that they weren't at the door. If they had been, they would have easily seen me coming down the stairs as it's in the direct view of the door. My brother is right behind me as we head over to where my parents are, whispering to try and find out what's going on. My parents had woken up to our dog barking and come out to see these 2 men knocking loudly at the door. At this point, we see the men return and they begin knocking again, despite the fact that no one had come to the door and our dog is still actively barking. The fact that they were there at this time in a location where houses are very spread out, hundreds of yards, and still knocking while the dog was barking made the situation even more terrifying. After a couple of minutes, the men walk away and we all shuffle across the kitchen into the family room to peek out the windows into our driveway, which is lit up by our outside light. There was a black Cadillac sitting there, but no one was inside from what we could see. Immediately, the question was, where did they go? They weren't in their car, and they were no longer at the front door. Unfortunately, we figured out the answer when the handles on our back French doors started jiggling. They were actively trying to enter the back of our house, which enters the kitchen. At this point, I just remember my mom frantically saying, "David," as pure terror overwhelmed her. At this point, 2 things happen. Adrenaline filled my body as I prepared my handgun, horrified at the very real possibility that I might have to shoot these men. Secondly, my dad finally grabbed the phone, called the police, and calmly told them what was happening. Thankfully, after a minute of the jiggling, they stopped at the back door and disappeared again, only to return to their knocking at the front. However, at this point, several minutes had gone by and suddenly we saw the local police fly up in multiple cruisers with their lights on. As they whipped into our driveway and front yard, the 2 men bolted away, attempting to run the long way around the house across the driveway. One of them disappeared out of our view, but the other one was intercepted by an officer yelling for him to get on the ground. He didn't, and he was immediately tased and fell on the ground. Some of the officers went around the house after the other guy, and one of them came to talk to my dad and I as we came out the front. They ended up finding the other man hiding in my sister's little playhouse in the backyard. It appears both of them were drunk and or high, as the one who hid had cocaine on him. And while they were both arrested that night, we never did find out what they were charged with or what happened to them. And needless to say, the whole experience was not fun. And it was another reminder that you're not even safe out in the sticks.
The day I met her. The warm summer afternoon was perfect for enjoying an ice cream cone, precisely what Bailey and I were doing. We were sitting on a bench in the park, enjoying the cool breeze and the delightful taste of our treats. As we chatted, Bailey asked me about my dreams and aspirations. I replied that I hadn't thought about it yet. She seemed surprised and prodded me further, but I couldn't think of anything I was particularly passionate about. Eventually, I turned the question back on her and asked about her dreams. With a dreamy smile, Bailey revealed she wanted to go to Hollywood. I couldn't help but tease her a bit, telling her that I didn't think acting was her thing. But she quickly corrected me, saying she wanted to be a stunt woman. The thought of her performing daring feats in front of the camera made me feel excited and a little nervous. And I couldn't help but chuckle. Bailey and I have been inseparable since our first year in middle school. Now, as we enter high school, I can't help but notice how focused and determined she is about everything. Her unwavering seriousness about schoolwork and her future aspirations makes it seem we're on the cusp of graduation, even though we're only freshmen. Despite her unawareness, I've harbored a crush on her for quite some time now. Something about her is intriguing and captivating, and I can't help but want to know her better. Unfortunately, it seems that I'm not the only one who's curious about Bailey. Due to her short height, people are always making fun of her and underestimating her abilities, but she never lets it get to her. Her upbeat and optimistic personality helps her push through the tough times. It's hard for her to understand the things happening around her, but she's always eager to learn and grow. When she mentioned Hollywood, it reminded me of our first meeting. She said something similar back then, too. As the summer vacation ended, I was terrified about starting school in a new place. Despite my reluctance, my mother dropped me off outside the school building. Having transferred school several times before due to my mom's work, I expected a similar experience. But this new school looked different. It appeared old and small, unlike the larger and more modern schools I had attended previously. Throughout the day, I felt disinterested and bored with the lessons and the students in my class. As the day ended, I decided to walk back home, hoping to discover something new and exciting in the area. Even though my mother had given me bus fare, I chose to walk instead, not wanting to deal with the crowds on the bus. I was confident in navigating my way home, so I set out on foot. As I wandered near the school, my stomach grumbled, and I decided to grab a hot dog from a street vendor. As I savored the warm and juicy snack, I strolled by an alleyway. My ears perked up at some curious sounds. I couldn't quite discern what was happening, but my curiosity was piqued, and I felt a sense of intrigue. I stopped at the end of the street and peered into the alley. My eyes landed on four boys who appeared to be around my age, but they looked taller and more menacing. There was a small girl around 4 feet tall whom they were cornering. Her eyes were filled with tears, and she looked like a mess. Those kids probably beat her for some reason.
What are you even doing in our class? You should go back to the kindergarten,
one of the boys said, sneering as he flicked her forehead, causing her to wince and put both hands over the area she was flicked. The other boy snickered in agreement, enjoying the cruel joke they had just made. The girl's eyes filled with tears as she looked at them, feeling humiliated and hurt by their words.
"You guys are jerks," she replied, her voice trembling, making them flinch.
What did you just say, you peanut?
The boy who had just flicked her growled and smacked her on the shoulders. Were they seriously ganging up on a small girl? I couldn't stand and watch, so I decided to butt in. Hey, what do you think you're doing? I asked as I approached them. Their attention shifted to me as I pushed the kid away from her and stood between them as her shield.
Isn't this the new kid?
The guy asked his friends, and they nodded in unison. He then gave a cocky smile, saying,
I guess we need to set him straight too.
I looked at him, confused, but then I felt a punch in my gut, followed by another punch in my left eye. The girl tried to stand up for me but was pushed, causing her to fall and bruise her knees. Soon after, I was getting beaten by his bunch. I did try to fight back, but it was of no use. They would have gone on longer but fled when a man saw them and threatened to call the police. Can you stand? I lifted up my gaze and glanced at the hand in front of my face. My eyes trailed to the girl who seemed a mess, but still seemed calm as she offered to help. Without much hesitation, I grabbed her hand and stood up. I asked her if she was okay, and she nodded.
Thanks for helping me. I'll repay you once I make it to Hollywood.
She beamed a smile at me, making my heart give a loud thump. Despite being roughed up by some jerks, I felt a sense of serenity around her. Something about her made me feel at ease, even after the chaos that had just occurred. Curious, she asked me where I lived, and to our surprise, we realized that we were neighbors. We began walking home together that day, chatting along the way. I didn't talk much, but I listened intently to everything she had to say. It was then that I started to feel like attending the school wouldn't be so bad after all. However, when I got home, my mom was furious with me for getting into a fight on my first day. She made sure to complain to the school about the incident, and as a result, the kids who attacked me were suspended. Despite the consequences, I'm glad I stopped that day and met her. Hey, do you want to head to McDonald's, my future stunt woman? Bailey's eyes lit up as I asked her this. She nodded vigorously as she got up from the park bench. I couldn't help but laugh at her eagerness as I followed her.
Hey guys, thanks so much for all the support. If you haven't subscribed to the channel yet, please feel free to do so.
This story happened when I was around elementary school age, so some of the details might be fuzzy, as this was a long time ago. I was in a hotel and happened to be completely alone. Here's some backstory as to why I was. Our TV was hooked up to an antenna, so the channels we got were repetitive and boring. It also meant we didn't get the Macy's Day Parade. So to solve this issue, we went to a hotel relatively close by to us. Unfortunately, my mum came down with a horrible illness a day or two before, so she couldn't join us. We also got our room upgraded to one with a balcony, and this is especially important because if the room wasn't upgraded, I don't think this would have ever happened. It occurred the day we were checking out, which was Thanksgiving. Our plan was to hang out the night before, wake up and watch the parade in the morning, then get home by the evening. It was around 8-ish when the rest of my family, not including my mum, went out to run an errand that came up. I, being lazy and not wanting to get ready just yet, opted to stay at the hotel room. Before he left, my dad said to double lock the door and always check the peephole should someone strange ever show up. He even did a practice run before he left. Then in some weird twist of irony, someone started knocking on the door not even 5 minutes after they'd left. Doing what my dad had instructed, I checked the peephole. I was expecting to see my dad surprising me with another checkup, but the person I saw looked nothing like my dad. This is where my memory gets a bit fuzzy. I believe the man was very old, with grey hair that showed signs of balding. I specifically remember a small cardboard box that he was holding in his hands. I remembered thinking it was some sort of an illegal substance, even at my young age, and fear set in as I stood there, unsure of what to do. Then I remembered what my dad had said, if something like this ever happened. The man said, "Are your parents here?" "No," I said. "They're down in the lobby, but we'll be up soon." "Why are they down in the lobby?" he asked. At this point, I didn't know what to say, so I backed away from the door. In hindsight, I'm sure now that he'd known what my dad had told me, as it turned out that his room was right next to ours. I ended up FaceTiming my mom on my iPad, because I wasn't allowed a phone at the time. She contacted the rest of my family and said to get hotel staff on the line. I tried calling them, but they didn't pick up. Not wanting to annoy them, I didn't call again, which I know was stupid of me, but I was young and didn't know how to handle this. While all this was happening, the man began banging on my door with a new intensity and was yelling for me to let him in. Now with all of the shouting, I couldn't hear my mom, so I went out onto the balcony. But that spot didn't last. I soon went back over to the peephole to see what was going on, and there was what I believed to be a security guard trying to help the man get into my room. The weird thing is, the key he was using didn't work for my door, so there's no way it could have been a master key the staff had. Not to mention, this hotel didn't have security. It just had staff, and I don't remember him wearing a uniform. He was also gone by the time real staff got there. I walked back out onto the balcony and was freaking out at this point. That's when he went into his real room and began banging on the windows, screaming for me to let him in. Terrified, I ran into the bathroom and locked the door, and that's where my dad found me when he got back. The man's excuse was that his son, who was around 15 to 16, and his girlfriend were supposed to be staying in our room. That was blatantly untrue and was just an excuse. I didn't look old enough to be in a relationship, and he should have known that since he'd seen me. If it wasn't for my dad telling me to check the door, I would have opened it to that stranger, and with the perfect timing of his arrival and his knowledge of a young girl being alone, I have reason to believe he was stalking us. Thankfully, I'll never know that outcome. We never did upgrade our antenna. But luckily, live streams became a thing.
Any of you given that Bumble app a go? I know it seems massively counterintuitive to download an app which requires the girl to make the first move when they're notoriously not the ones to make the first move. But I can assure you, it's definitely worth it. But at the same time, I think the single worst thing that happened to me in 2020 took place just as a result of a Bumble date. So, it all started when I matched with a Welsh girl named Lima. After a day or two of talking, we agreed to meet at a little cafe for a few coffees. We hit it off talking about this and that, and before you know it, we're chatting like we'd known each other for years. 1 hour turned to two, two to three, and still neither of us was ready to call time on the date. Neither of us drank alcohol that evening, her for religious reasons, me because I'm something of a fitness freak. But while she was drinking mocktails, I was on the coffee and I was on it big time. There came a point where I needed to wheeze so badly that I was practically doing the entire river dance routine waiting for the one-person toilet to become available. This happens every half an hour without fail almost all night. I have to interrupt her, apologize, and leg it off to the little bathroom to relieve myself. I felt like an absolute idiot having to nip off to the lav so often, but every time I emerged, she'd look up and smile, waving away my apologies with some light mockery of how I have the bladder of a four-year-old. But one time, I emerge from the toilets to see that she's no longer sitting alone, and that someone is sitting in my seat. At first, I thought she just bumped into a guy she knew. She certainly looked quite comfortable talking to him, but it turned out to be the complete opposite. I walked up behind him, playfully put my hands on his shoulders and say, "I think you might be in my seat there, mate." It wasn't confrontational or aggressive, just pure banter. I expected the guy to jump up, maybe warmly apologize, maybe give a little introduction, something like that. But he didn't. He looked back at me with this look on his face that said, "Get your effing hands off of me." And as he's staring up at me, Lima shoots me this look as if to say, "Help." Only then am I like, "Wait, do you two know each other?" Turns out this bloke had been sitting alone enjoying some food and wine and had been making eyes at Lima every so often. Then, when I'd gone off for a wee, he'd taken his opportunity, sat in my seat, and began to, as Lima put it, flirt so outrageously forward that I thought I was going to puke up my nojito. Now, I actually had to ask this guy to leave us alone before he got up and finally gave me my chair back, but not before he tried to stare me out. I had a few inches on him, that's in height, you oversized children, and I could tell he didn't put half the gym time in that I did, so it's not like I was in the least bit intimidated. It just seemed like he was trying really, really hard to be some comic book idea of what women want, and it was honestly a little bit pathetic. He looked completely and utterly harmless, like a chocolate pistol, and he looks like he'd melt at the first sign of trouble. But as I found out later that night, looks can be dangerously deceiving. So, after the little confrontation at the table, Lima and I laugh it off, then carry on with our night. Now Lima can see over my shoulder and therefore also see the creepy guy, but all I can see in front of me is her and one of the cafe's walls, so I have to rely on her to let me know if the guy is still there. I honestly expected him to just leave after such a confrontation. Everyone in the cafe was watching. It was pretty mortifying, but he didn't. He stayed put and continued to make eyes at Lima, which, to her credit, she just ignored. But then when it came to me walking her home, he gets up and pays his bill too. Then yep, you guessed it. I look over my shoulder and as we're passing through Chinatown, and guess who I see? Tiny Mr. Stareout, still keeping up the intimidation game by staring out from under his brow, obviously too drunk to realize he looked far more comical than scary. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't exactly scared at that point, but we were being followed. It made for something of a tense situation, but nothing I thought I couldn't handle. As we approached her apartment block, I asked Lima if she was comfortable going inside while the guy could see where she lived. She admitted to being uncomfortable about it, but the block had like 50 to 60 flats in it, and unless he got in the door behind her, there was little chance of him working out which unit she lived in. But as it turned out, Lena was way more concerned about me and actually invited me inside for a nightcap. I didn't assume that I was getting lucky, but I wasn't about to turn her down. So I went inside for a cup of this weird ginger tea in the comfort that our little stalker friend would soon get bored and wander off. I was in her flat for no less than an hour, and by that time, each of us was confident that our new friend had departed. We even checked out of her bathroom window, which looked down into the street, and he was nowhere to be seen. So I thanked her for a good night. We had a little smooch, and I started my walk home with that lighter-than-air feeling you get after a successful date. It's around that time that I start thinking something along the lines of, "God, imagine if that loser was somehow still following me," which prompts me to look over my shoulder. Lo and behold, there's a single figure following me, maybe 50 or 60 meters behind, with a remarkably similar silhouette to the lad who tried following us. I have to admit to being in a state of disbelief for a moment as I stopped and studied the figure as they approached. Then, after passing under a streetlight, I got a clear look at the person. It was him.
"You gotta be screwing with me, mate,"
I said out loud, and immediately they stopped. I knew it was him, so him playing at being a statue didn't make a blind bit of difference. I just told him to keep his distance and there'd be no problems, then just carried on with the 20-minute walk back to my place. Every so often I'm checking over my shoulder and this lad is still behind me. Granted, he's some way away, but he's definitely following me, and the closer we get to my apartment, the more it becomes obvious that he's making a considerable effort to close the distance. Now, unlike Lima, the apartment I lived in was just one of two in this big old Edwardian. I have the top floors while the other tenant had the ground floor in the basement, complete with his entrance. So, if this lad sees what door I go into, he's got my flat. He doesn't have to guess which one of the 60 I'm in.
He knows where I live. Obviously, I'm not in the least bit comfortable with that, so I decide on a little show of force to deter my new follower. I turn around and just march right at him. Then, when I'm within about spitting distance, I gave him what for about being a creep and a loser, promising I'll kick his head in if he carries on following me. It seemed to have the desired effect as he started walking off in the complete opposite direction. It was really strange, but I carry on walking, checking over my shoulder one more time, and he's gone. Problem solved, right? Well, not quite. About a minute or two goes by and I reach the entrance to a fairly small park. My flat is literally just on the other side of it, so I'm in this blissful ignorance of thinking that not only had I scared the creepy guy off, but that I was so close to home that nothing could possibly hurt me now. I mean, I was on home base, right in my big old backyard. Besides, I'd had a great night. I had drinks with this gorgeous anesthesiologist, definitely securing myself a second date in the process, and I had myself a little tough guy moment with that absolute... Bam. Everything flashed bright for a second, and I felt my knees just buckling under me, almost as if though my brain had switched off power to them. I honestly don't know if I was knocked out for a second or two, but I do know that the next thing I can feel is this sharp, hot pain in the back left side of my head. I knew that I'd been hit by something, I just didn't know what or by who. I was so dazed that it didn't even occur to me that it could have been him. I honestly thought I was just being mugged or something, in which case, it wouldn't have been my first rodeo. I'd been mugged at knife point in London back when I was a student, and I needed to just keep my mouth shut, hand over the valuables, and get away with nothing but damaged pride and a lump on my head. So, the only thing I do before trying to find my feet is to toss out my wallet and phone onto the concrete and just be like, just take it and F off. I heard someone wheeze a laugh, probably at how pathetic I looked. But when they spoke, I knew exactly who it was. I thought you were going to kick my head in. Now look at you. Whack. It kicked me so hard in the side of the head that I thought my orbital socket might be broken. And in between worrying that I'd end up losing my eye if they kicked me again, it dawned on me the little toe rag who'd been following me had somehow found a way to cut me off and ambush me. And it became quite obvious that I was in much, much more trouble than I'd first anticipated. The phone and wallet weren't going to cut it. I needed to get on my feet, and fast. It didn't matter that I was taller and stronger, maybe even faster than this guy. He had the upper hand, and let me tell you, it was not a nice feeling. The force of the kick set me off balance, but I tried to use the momentum to find my feet. If I was drunk, I'd have been utterly screwed. But since I was sober, I did actually manage to get both feet on the ground before trying to bring myself upright. But nope. Another kick hits me right in the corner of the mouth, and I was sent flying backwards again. This time, not only is my mouth filling up with blood, but I can feel the teeth on the left-hand side of my mouth grinding together where the kick had chipped a few of them. It sent my skin crawling as I spat the blood out. I put my hand out and felt something cold and metallic, a fence on which I was once again trying to pull myself up. But again, right as I was about to find my feet, the guy attacked. Only this time, he didn't strike me. He wrapped one arm around my neck and held something cold and sharp over my right eye. I'm not sure if it was a knife or a piece of glass or whatever, but I think that was the single most terrifying moment of my life, thinking, well, I'm going to be blind now, and hoping I'll be able to buck him off before he goes for my throat or something. Only he didn't cut me. Instead, he hissed something right into my ear. Let's just say brevity wasn't his strong suit, and I'd rather not type out the actual exchange, but it was as gloating, vicious, and vile as you can imagine, with plenty of references to the date I'd been on that evening. I didn't beg. I didn't cry. I just waited for whatever was going to happen. But thank God he must have seen sense or something. He made some comment about me only being alive the next day because he'd let me live. After that, he gave me one more good punch to the side of the face. Then all I heard was the sound of trainers hitting concrete as he legged it. I spent the next few minutes spitting out blood as I tried to find my phone. I think he'd either stamped on it or I'd maybe tossed it with a little too much force because the screen was smashed into bits. But again, a little bit of divine intervention meant it worked just enough for me to hammer out a 999 call, after which I dragged myself to the park's gates and sat there waiting for the ambulance to turn up. Aside from a bit of concussion, a lot of swelling and some chipped teeth, I was pretty much all right. There was no skull fracture, no broken orbital socket, nothing like that, although I'd been lucky to say the least. The doctor said the first wound on the back of my head looked like it had come from a brick or a large rock, and if he'd hit me any harder with it in that particular spot, there's a good chance he'd have just killed me with his first strike. And that was the really scary bit, thinking that all the kicks and punches and threats that came after were like a weird blessing. I was still alive, when in some timelines, I would be checking in for the big sleep. I was angry about it for a long, long time, and I'd be a liar if I said I didn't let that attack change my behavior for the worse for a while. Seeing the guy getting 6 years for assault and grievous bodily harm really helped things, but still, that wasn't enough for me on some level, and it took me a while to acquiesce. Me and Lima carried on dating for a few months, which was lovely, but she had to move away for work, so obviously we had to call time on it. And the 4 trips to the dentist were terrible, as they basically had to file and cap my teeth one at a time, and that was definitely the worst part. How 5 minutes turned into an ordeal that lasted months of court dates and dental appointments. That's my one big takeaway from the whole thing, really. How one little misunderstanding can have terrifyingly far-reaching consequences.